Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Our city's young people deserve everything and then some.
After a year of often tense negotiations, the Chicago Teachers Union has reached a tentative contract. We hear from members of their bargaining team. Toni Preckwinkle on her decision to run for a fifth term as Cook County Board President.
We're in a moment where there are so many forces arrayed against journalism.
And Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Ronan Farrow on the role of a free press and his new podcast. And now to some of today's top stories. Polls close for suburban voters in less than 2 hours. Today, Cook County Clerk Monica Gordon cast her ballot in her home precinct in South Suburban Chicago Heights. And she also released this time-lapse video that shows her office moving out election voting equipment to be distributed across the county in today's consolidated election. Voters in Skokie, for example, are deciding on a ranked choice voting referendum, and several municipalities, including neighbors in Aurora, are choosing their next mayor. Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin is running for re-election but faces stiffer political headwinds this year against challenger Alderman-at-Large John Lash. Starting today, people who are being held on the county's electronic monitoring program will no longer be under the supervision of the Cook County Sheriff. Instead, those who are ordered by a judge to be on EM in lieu of detention will be under the authority of the Office of the Chief Judge. Advocates are celebrating the move, saying the sheriff implemented harmful rules for people on electronic monitoring, leading to the loss of jobs and preventing them from completing basic tasks. Chief Judge Tim Evans's office says while his department's pretrial services officers don't have arrest authority, the office does provide more structure and support than given with the sheriff's department. Over the next year, the sheriff's office will wind down its oversight of those who are assigned to EM before today. And it may be April Fool's Day, but the city isn't joking around. Beginning today, warning notices are being issued at 16 new speed camera locations across the city. The warnings will continue through the end of this month before fines will start being doled out. Drivers going 6 to 10 miles per hour over the speed limit will be fined $35, and those going 11 miles an hour or more will be fined $100. The 16 cameras are part of 50 new ones that are expected to be installed throughout the year. Meanwhile, if you've got an outstanding parking ticket, speed or red light ticket, expired registration, missing city sticker or license plate, you're in luck. The city is waiving late penalties, interest, or fees for eligible tickets issued before 2024, but that only lasts through June 30th, everybody. Up next, Chicago teachers have a tentative contract agreement. Look at what it includes right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
After almost a year of often contentious negotiations, the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools have reached a tentative contract deal. The union's contract expired last June, and the last three contract negotiations all came to a strike vote, and in two cases, an actual strike before a deal was reached. Joining us with their perspectives on all of this are Thad Goodchild, Deputy General Counsel for the Chicago Teachers Union and member of the union's small bargaining team, Zedra Foster, Director of Grievances at the Chicago Teachers Union. Ms. Foster is a former high school teacher and also a member of the CTU's small bargaining team. And Vicki Kurzidlow is a CPS teacher of more than 30 years and is a member of CTU's big bargaining team. And folks at home will explain what the difference between the small and the big bargaining teams are shortly. But before we get to our conversation, Mayor Johnson couldn't help but take a victory lap. Here's some of what he said this morning.
And no one in this city wants to see anybody in this city underpaid or undervalued. I know that. So, we got it done. The first mayor in 15 years to get a contract done, keep labor peace.
Okay, so my thanks to our guests again, Zedra Foster, Vicky Krasidlow, and Thad Goodchild. And as we mentioned, the difference between the small and the big bargaining team. Small bargaining team, those are the folks who are actually at the table sitting across from the district and the city. Big bargaining team, it's about 65 educators and staff members who sort of like give the temperature and how we're feeling about the potential agreement and how it's going. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. all right. So while this contract, it was settled without a strike vote, of course, there was a lot of work to get here. And along the way, an entire school board quit. Then a new one got elected and appointed. A successful attempt to fire the school CEO, Pedro Martinez. Vicky Krasidlow, over to you first. What do you think the holdup was over this past year?
I think the holdup itself was Mr. Pedro Martinez. I feel as though we at CTU came to the table ready to negotiate a fair contract, a contract that is cumulative, that builds off of each previous contract. I feel as though the Board of Education was also willing and ready to bargain in good faith. I believe that Pedro Martinez himself was one of the biggest reasons why we were blocked at every pass.
That said, the raises that you all received that were offered last summer, these are the same raises that that went into the deal that we have today. Zedra, you didn't have a deal last summer, though. What else was holding you up? What else was outstanding that wasn't sweet enough?
So we started this process with quite a few proposals. I know you all have heard it was 700 proposals. So we had a lot of things that we were trying to accomplish. We started this process trying to transform Chicago Public Schools. It wasn't just about compensation. We were concerned about staffing. We wanted to create an elementary school day that enhanced the experience for all of our students. So it was a lot on the table, and it took some time, but we felt like we've made some significant improvements. And we are confident that the students will have a better experience in Chicago Public Schools as a result.
No strike vote this time, of course. Thad Goodchild, how would you compare this process to previous ones under previous mayors?
Very different in every way. You know, this is the first time that we're negotiating a contract with a mayor that isn't an adversary, but a mayor that was a middle school teacher. And knows what it's like to walk into a public school and meet children that are bringing with them problems that come through the door of every school in the city every day. And as you mentioned before, we had a situation where he had a CEO who decided that he wasn't going to listen to the mayor and that he wasn't going to listen to the board. But despite that, we're really proud of what we were able to accomplish over the last year and what it's going to mean for students, educators, and families across the city.
So let's walk through what some of the gains for CPS staff and teachers are. It doubles the number of libraries and librarians. We've mentioned smaller class sizes. There is more prep time for elementary school teachers and staff. Protections for academic freedom, and I want to come back to that in a bit. Protections for LGBTQ students. I think, Zedra, I want to come to you on this first. You know, I think a lot of people have heard about, you know, this sort of protections for academic freedom for tenured professors, for example. But how does this apply to our public school teachers?
So the academic freedom is something that we feel is important because it allows our teachers to be able to use their professional judgment and teach the truth. There's so many different political forces right now, and we want to make sure that our teachers had language in the contract that would allow them to be able to teach and provide, you know, an experience for our students. And so, like you indicated, we've gotten a lot of protections for LGBTQ plus students and some of our employees, and so supports for our bilingual students, special ed students. So we try to build a force field around our students to protect them, and we feel confident that this contract will be able to do that.
Vicky, what does this mean for, you know, people working in elementary schools, and how does all this sort of go together to make it better for you and for your students?
It's really exciting. Teachers are thrilled that we have more prep time to plan the lessons, plan the curriculum, prepare for our students to make their learning experience richer, more attainable, accessible, and teachers are thrilled that now, with this new set of agreements, that we are going to be able to actually use our expertise to build upon what we already have. You know, teachers take a lot of work home, and teachers work a lot of hours outside of the classroom. This not only allows us the ability to develop our craft inside the building, and it really, it gives us a lot of respect, I feel, back, you know?
Okay. Back to teachers.
Yes, yes.
Thad, some of these contract gains, they might be in direct opposition to, you know, what we're hearing from President Trump and his goals for education. How enforceable do you think some of these changes are in this contract?
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing around the country right now is states, municipalities, school districts standing up for what they believe in, despite the attacks coming from the new administration in Washington on public education, on teaching the truth, on respecting public workers writ large, and public educators. And so I think, you know, this is an area where we are really glad for the collaboration and shared values with the people that we sat on the other side of the table from. You know, teaching Black history, that's American history. Teaching about the contributions of the LGBTQ community, the immigrant community. These are all things that are critical and that we're going to stand together and protect.
Zedra, do you have any concerns that, you know, the hybrid board, you know, they still have to figure out, you know, their budgetary challenges, right? Even though a contract deal has been reached, CPS still has issues. Are there changes in this contract that you think could cause issues for the district in the future?
I don't think so. I think that CEO Martinez was very clear that there's money to afford this contract. And so we've taken a lot of precautions in making sure that there are protections for our students. It's not just about salary and benefits. There's things that our students can really benefit from. And we think that there's a commitment from the school board to ensure that, you know, we are able to see this contract through.
Vicki, better pay for veteran teachers, yes. Senior teachers was a thing this time. And I know when I covered this several years ago, that was an issue even then. What did you get this time? Did you get what you didn't get last time?
What we got is amazing. We added 7 steps to, you may have heard, I should preface
and
this.
And a step is a raise, that everybody knows.
A step is a raise.
Yes.
And yes, forgive me.
That's okay.
A step is a raise. And previously, at step 14, we began, you may have heard, this alphabet soup sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where you'd be on year 14 of teaching, and then the next year you'd be on 14A, then B, then it went like that. Now there are steps up to 25 that are far easier to understand along with the COLA raises and raises in between.
Okay, well, you didn't have before. Before we go, about 30 seconds left, not a done deal yet. Thad, what are the next steps?
So tomorrow night, we will have our House of Delegates convene, representatives from every school across the entire city, and we're gonna go through the tentative agreement. And this tentative agreement has so much in it for every constituency across our membership and every school in the city. We are so excited about what this is going to mean for the student experience. You mentioned doubling the number of libraries, increasing access to sports, access to fine arts, students being able to attend field trips at no cost if they're eligible for free and reduced price lunch. And so we're going to go through, teachers are sticklers for attentions to detail.
Yes, they are.
And
so
we're going
to
go through those
details. Over. And then after House of Delegates, then House of Delegates decides that it goes on to the rank and file. Then the board has a decision to make as well.
That's correct.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to leave it there because it's going to be a thing that we're going to keep following. And thanks to all of you for joining us. My thanks again to Thad Goodchild, Zedra Foster, and Vicki Kurzidlow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle on why she's running for re-election. Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle is running for a 5th term. Last month, on her 78th birthday, the apparently indefatigable Preckwinkle cited the, quote, chaos and uncertainty emanating from Washington as the reason for her decision to run again. Preckwinkle, who has led Cook County since 2010, will face re-election next year. Joining us now to talk about that decision and the challenges of dealing with the new Trump administration is Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle. Welcome back, Madam President.
Thank you.
So, as we just mentioned, this would be your 5th term if you are successful in running for re-election to lead Cook County. Did retirement ever cross your mind?
I don't believe in retirement. And, you know, I've said that if I didn't do this job, I'd pick another one, and it wouldn't be as interesting or challenging or as impactful.
It is lucky to be able to say that about the job that you have.
Yes. I always say that in democracy, the highest honor your fellow citizens can bestow upon you is elective office, so I've been blessed.
Some voters in the country, they've called for mandatory retirement age for publicly elected officials. And given what happened in the presidential race with President Biden's age, health concerns eventually becoming a focal point, what would be your response to the thought of a mandatory retirement age for political officials?
Oh, I don't think it makes sense for elected officials. You know, frankly, one of the challenges we have in public life is there's not a proper appreciation for experience, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've had to lead the county and look forward to four more years of doing the same.
You defeated former Alderman Bob Fioretti of the 2nd Ward. That was back in 2018. At the time, you told reporters you'd serve one more term in office. Then, of course, you ran for mayor, losing to Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And at that time, you decided, of course, to run for a 4th term, now a 5th. What makes you want to keep doing this job, and what more do you feel like you'd like to accomplish in this role?
Well, you know, I've been grateful, as I said, for the opportunity. When I came into office in 2010, we had some severe financial struggles. We spent the first 2 or 3 years trying to get the county on a good, firm financial footing. And then we addressed the challenges we have in the policy arena, particularly around delivering good health care to people. And as on a sustainable system, we had some financial challenges. So we worked on both access and finances. And in the public safety arena, we worked to try to make our criminal justice system more fair to the people who become entangled in it. And I'm proud of that good work and grateful that the state legislature kind of codified a lot of the work that we've been doing in Cook County in the Pretrial Fairness Act. Well, no, I mean, and then, of course, the pandemic hit.
So then there was that.
Yes, the global pandemic, which took up most of the time between 20 and 23, almost 24. And now, frankly, we've got a very challenging president of the United States, and I believe that it's a good time to have somebody with experience at the helm.
You have said that the presidential administration is causing chaos and uncertainty. What are you most uncertain or concerned about going forward?
Well, I think President Trump has decided he's going to try to overwhelm and demoralize the people who disagree with him. And you've seen a barrage of executive orders and actions at the federal level, which sometimes are withdrawn the next day, but in any case contribute, as I said, to chaos and uncertainty. I'm particularly concerned, of course, about health care for all Americans. I believe in universal health care. We're definitely not there, but I'm responsible for a public health system that does about a little less than half of the charity care in the entire county. Although we have about 64 hospitals, our 2 hospitals provide half of the charity care. And we are heavily dependent on Medicaid. About a third of the people in Cook County depend on Medicaid, children, seniors, adults with disabilities. And, you know, Medicaid provides support for most of the women who give birth in this county. So, I mean, we have a lot at stake as the president attacks our national health care system.
To that point, Governor J.B. Pritzker has recently said that Illinois could lose as much as $11 billion in federal funds. Do you and your team have a sense of what that means for Cook County? How much could Cook County stand to lose in federal funding?
That's not what's been our focus, frankly. We've been trying to figure out on a case-by-case basis, lane by lane, what might happen at the federal government and what could potentially be our responses. So we've been doing a little planning ahead, but I'm trying not to be anxious. We'll see what happens and then respond to it.
When you say case by case, it's sort of like waiting until we hear, oh, the CDC is allegedly taking from your Cook County Health Department, or what could happen with housing, rather than
what could happen,
anticipating.
Yeah, what could happen in Medicaid? What could happen in our infrastructure investments? I mean, there are a lot of ways, you know, there are a lot of ways in which the federal government supports activities at the local level. And what's going to happen, of course, if the federal government withdraws support is that local governments, whether it's the city or the county or the state, are going to have to figure out how they can fill the gap.
Have you had any contact with the new administration?
No.
One of your signature achievements has been you've been able to balance the Cook County budget year over year without raising taxes often. If it became necessary after losing federal funds, would you consider supporting raising taxes if you needed to make up those funds?
I don't want to commit to anything now. What we're trying to do is, as I said, anticipate what are the potential ways in which federal action could impact us, and then what would be our response?
One potential help for property owners that you are working on is the county's homeowner relief initiative. Tell us about that, and what do homeowners need to know to qualify?
Well, we're going to try to get preliminary approval for the program at our April board meeting. It's a $15 million program that will provide $1,000 in relief to about 13,600 homeowners who've seen an increase in their property taxes of at least 50% in one of the last 3 years, between 21 and 24.
In your most recent budget, your guaranteed income pilot, it ended. What would you say is the status of the research there and the potential to bring it back later on?
Well, I'm very grateful for the good work that's been done by my team around guaranteed income. You know, I believe that this is something we need federally, but until the time we get to that state of grace, it's important for local units of government to have guaranteed income programs to show that they can be beneficial to our residents. We're working with the University of Chicago academics to look at the results. We distributed the last payments in January. So we hope later this spring to be able to talk about the impacts on the individuals who participated in the program, 3,250 individuals.
Almost out of time, Madam President. Changes to the electronic monitoring program in Cook County are afoot. They are shifting from the Cook County Sheriff's Office to a department under the Chief Judge, Tim Evans. Does it have what it needs to support this kind of a program? And what do you think of this shift happening?
Well, we're focused on public safety for our residents. The Chief Judge and the Sheriff both had electronic monitoring programs. Last fall, the Sheriff informed us that this was not a business he wanted to be in any longer. The Chief Judge has had a program, and we're working to support his efforts to expand the program to accommodate the Sheriff's departure from the arena.
Okay. Madam President, Tony Preckwinkle, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck in your reelection campaign.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. Up next, journalist Ronan Farrow talks about reporting diplomacy and his new podcast. Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Ronan Farrow has uncovered stories of sexual harassment and assault, chronicled the decline of America's soft power, and explored how powerful people try to track and manipulate journalists. Farrow was in town today discussing his latest project, a podcast that defies easy categorization. Our reporter, Nick Blumberg, sat down with him.
Ronan Farrow has worked on magazines, books, documentaries, and podcasts.
Very Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek. I'll do it all.
And kind of like that off-the-wall TV matriarch, the subject at the heart of Farrow's new podcast, Not a Very Good Murderer, is a little out there.
But as I looked into Cece, I discovered that her background was complicated. Like, really complicated.
I'm accused of trying to kill my husband.
It is a series of true crime mysteries where I stumble into these cold cases and have to crack them. It is a character portrait of a really complicated, difficult person who is problematic in some ways and lovable in other ways. It's also something of an anatomy of a certain kind of voter imbibing a certain kind of disinformation.
A former pageant queen now living in luxury in suburban Phoenix, Cece's complicated story goes beyond the accusations of attempted murder.
There's no one like Cece. She is a one-of-a-kind person. And deciphering what makes her tick, it is a big part of this series.
This project got started because you were vetting a source who made a pretty explosive claim about sexual assault. Why was it important for you to kind of demonstrate to the audience just how much work goes into vetting a source like that for an investigative story?
We're in a moment where there are so many forces arrayed against journalism. There's an economic model that is in doubt. There's political headwinds. And there's major legacy news institutions who are bending the knee a bit.
Farrow's reported for years on sexual abuse, including a recent New Yorker piece on a serial rapist whose predation was essentially an open secret.
I suppose if I have a beat, it's identifying systemic injustices and trying to put a spotlight on them.
You've experienced both working in and reporting on the foreign policy diplomacy space. How do you see the state of the U.S. on the world stage right now?
The United States is in the throes of a surge of fascism and authoritarian tendencies, and an effort to not only dismantle a lot of basic rights and freedoms and aspects of the rule of law domestically, but also to transition in a direction of more of a bullying, high-handed role with an absence of either soft power or diplomacy.
As for his new podcast, Farrow says its main subject didn't much care for it.
She called one of the producers on the project and threatened to come and kill all of you with my bare hands, I believe was the quote.
But he has been heartened by the kinds of responses he's gotten from audience members.
I see my mother in this character. I see someone in my family, someone at my Thanksgiving dinner table in this series. And a lot of people have written in to say that it's helped them cope with dynamics of abuse and addiction and mental health issues in their families.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg.
Not a Very Good Murderer was released on Audible last month. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm serving Chicago for 37 years.